Mr. Bell, Reel 3. We were talking about when you'd been sent to the Saker Barracks at Asbury Park in New York, and then you were waiting to be assigned to ships. Now, you mentioned HMS Biter. Was this one of the DE escorts? No,
this was an escort carrier, a cross-top carrier. They converted a lot of merchant ships to carriers, you know, escort carriers. They were about 10,000 tons, and they were, ours was 400 feet long, the craft flight deck was 400 feet long, and I was allocated to that. Now, I was one of six ASDIC ratings allocated to the Biter. Six ASDIC ratings. Now, that's a huge amount. But, of course, it was the Biter had a how should I describe it? Had a cabinet way down below the waterline, you know, in the bows, in the bow part of the ship. And it had two on watch at once. Not like a destroyer. With one ASDIC rating on board, you watch it once. It had two at one time. And I was allocated with one of the six there. And I enjoyed that.
You joined them in May 1942.
That's right.
Where were they when you joined them?
Brooklyn Navy Yard. That was in Brooklyn Navy Yard. The one escort carrier, the Suva. The first one was the Archer. And the second one was the Biter. You know, they were all called like this, the Avenger and Biter, Charger, and all the rest of it were. I'm just trying to see that Charger.
And you were only sort of sent aboard them for. I mean, you were with them in the end till May 1943.
Yes, I was. Yes.
Now, what you joined them in the Brooklyn. What were your first impressions on joining the ship?
Well, I have no experience of sea, but before I joined the Biter, incidentally, while I was waiting for in Asbury Park, I go back here, I missed this bit. I was sent down to, you talked about training, did we have any training? It's reminded me, you see. I was sent down to Key West, Florida. I was sent down to Key West to train the Americans in ASDICs. And I hadn't been to see myself yet. Yeah, they thought I was proficient enough to train the Americans. And I went down there to Key West in Florida.
And what do you remember of that?
Well, it's hair-raising. I went down by train from New York to Miami. Now, that's a hell of a journey. New York to Miami. And I remember the Negro porters, you know, coming on and selling you things, you know. And I went right through Philadelphia and Miami, not to Miami, I went to Philadelphia, Washington, and the train did, of course, and where else? Charlestown, right away down, right down the eastern seaboard, you see, and I eventually arrived in Miami. And when I got to Miami, they bundled us into a bus. And for some reason, I was in charge of the readings that were going down there. I don't know why they chose me, but they did. And the man at Miami, the guard, said to me, "Who's in charge of this here shower?" And I said, "Me." He said, "And it was me." I said, "Me, you know." Put my hand up. And he said, he said, "Have you any identification?" And I showed him the passbook, you know, which was my photograph in the back, you know, which is like a convict. And he said, he looked at it and he said, "Oh yeah, it could be you," he said. "It could be you." And carry on, like, you know. And the pilot's into a bus. And we went over 126 miles of bridges to the ASDIC station at Key West, which is off the coast, Key West. That was their sonar station, you know, as they called it. Sonar station. That was equivalent to our ASDIC station, you see. And I was actually training American sailors there. American sailors.
Did they have the same equipment?
No, they didn't have the same. It's far inferior to ours. It's peculiar, that, isn't it? You know, it wasn't as good as ours.
In what way wasn't it as good?
Well, it didn't pick things up as well as ours did, and it didn't have the ranges that we had. You know, you could detect the U-boat at quite a long range, but theirs was shorter. And It didn't tell you as much. For instance, as I learned later, it didn't tell you as much information to pass on your captain as ours did. I thought it was very inferior, our dairy footman for us. The Americans were very derogatory about the Germans. They used to say, these cults will sort them out, will sort them out. I said, don't you underestimate them. They've been training for 5 years ahead of you, so don't you underestimate them.
I wanted to ask, what did you think of the people you were training as compared to the people you trained with? In other words, were they as good quality, the US recruits?
I didn't think so. I thought the Americans were not as diligent as we were. They weren't, you know, down to earth as we were. They thought the war would be a nice game for them, you know. And when we finished our training, incidentally, when I was there, the Americans, I should remember one thing. When I was there, and I was only 20, you know, that's really time, very impressionable. I was sitting on a park bench, you know, when we had a little bit of leave. I was sitting on a park bench, and there was a young American sailor coming along, and he suddenly collapsed in front of me. He collapsed on the floor in front of me. And I went to pick him up, and there was knives taken out of his shoulder blades. A knife taken out of his shoulder blades. Well, a young lad like that, I got the shock of my life, you see. And I picked him up and put him over my shoulder and carried him into the barracks. And I said to one of the sailors there, I said, I've just found this man. He's got a knife in his back, you know. And he said, just lay him down on the bed. And I did, so I sort of shoved him off and laid him down on the bed. And he turned around, he looked at me and said to his mate, another one, he said. And I thought, what's happened over to here? And he said, what had happened was the Cuban lads, you know, the Cuban girls were very pretty coffee-coloured girls, you know. And the Yankee sailors, of course, were you know, the festive, doesn't it? And the Cuban men were knifing these sailors, you know, that were cutting them up, you see. And this sailor was... had been nice to see as he was chatting the girl up, you know. So I got out there quickly. but he died, that young sailor died. That took the time. That impressed me enormously. That. I thought, my goodness, he's from Cuba. Cuba was only 90 miles away, of course, from Key West. Right?
Yep. Now, getting back to the biter, could you give us a description of the biter? Because it's not a well-known ship, but that would help us.
Yes, I can give you a description of that, the biter. Let's see now.
No, they can't see that. From your own words, I mean.
No. That will help me. You see? That will help me. The biter was about 10,000 tons almost, and she was crewed by 555 people. 555 crew. Captain was the Captain Abel Smith, who became Admiral later. He was a superb captain. Captain Abel Smith. And you see, she was a merchantman. And a flap top put on her, I thought, and a hangar there to carry hurricanes and swordfish. Right? Four swordfish and six hurricanes, I believe, that time.
Now, what about... what was your accommodation like on the ship? Where was your mess deck?
Our accommodation were hammocks. Our accommodation was like American accommodation, you know, bunks in three tiers, bunks. Well, very good they were. Just as on the dock, there were the accommodation was excellent.
And it was all British crew.
Yes, all British crew. Yes, it was all British.
But it had been adapted by American sailors, American yards.
She was. I'll tell you this in detail. She came up to New York as the SS Rio Paraná, in other words. And she was a banana boat. She was built for carrying bananas, and I think it was the Sun. I can't remember this. The Sun Reconstruction Company converted to the Southern British Navy to an aircraft carrier. You see, and she was a very good carrier. She only had one screw, but she could do about 14 knots there, about 15 knots, or thereabouts, or maybe more. But she was fully crewed by 555 crew, which was quite big. Now, I didn't think I thought I was going to do escort work, and yet here I was in an escort carrier. They were called escort carriers because they were built for air cover for carriers, for convoys, you see. And they used to stick in the middle of a convoy, you know, for protection.
Now, you joined her at Brooklyn Navy Yard. What was your first mission with her, or sort of first?
In the Atlantic, And we were escorted by three destroyers, the Pathfinder, Opportune, and Obdurate. That were the three destroyers, the three fleet destroyers that were, they were excellent. And I admired them. I thought they were wonderful.
And what were you doing? Were you on an Atlantic convoy or just sailing back?
Well, we'd have to sail to England, of course, you know. And we had to, we came across to England into the Clyde, I think. We came back into the Clyde, I think.
And what happened then?
We were allocated to Western Approaches. So we were stationed in Belfast. I was in Belfast with the biker and the Dummett. You know, it's amazing that, isn't it? But it used to run out of Belfast, yes. And she was on escort duty nearly all the time, you know.
Now, can you give us an idea of what a typical day would be like aboard ship?
Well, it depends what you were on, you know. You were splitting the watches, weren't you? You know, in the middle watch or the morning watch or the afternoon dog watches, you know, as watches go on board ship, you know. And you were allocated to your watches. And you had to be on time for your watches, mind, because you were leaving another person, you see, and therefore that was something that you had to be very careful about. And you always had to be in... I used to be allocated to lookout duty quite a lot, actually. Besides my ASDIC job, I had a lookout as well.
What was that? Tell me what entailed.
On the bridge. You see there, you have the bridge there, you see. And I'd be on lookout duty on the bridge here, you know. Looking out for other ships, you know. Enemy ships and things like that, you know. And that was your job to look out. And you had binoculars, you know. Very hard.
Did you have a specific area you had to scan, or were you in charge of all of it?
Oh, yes. No. You did. You swept from there to there, or there to there, you know, and so forth.
So someone else would be doing the next scan?
Oh, yes, of course, yes. That would be to cover the whole area, you see. Oh, yes. I remember one fellow one day, there was a joke going around, he said, what was it, he said, anyone for salvation? And he said, and I said, get off my bridge, sort of thing, you know, anyone for salvation. Funny, he'd been in the Salvation Army, so he said, anyone for salvation, get off my bridge. It's a funny thing like that went on.
Now, what about your duties as an ASDIC rating? Tell me about that.
You were allocated to your watches, and you were, two of you were on the time, so when you, two of you, did 1.5 hours on, individually, you had your own seat, your own, it was a beautiful cabinet we were in, and you had a seat, you know, yourself, and your earphones, of course, and your recording, your recorder, and that was all. And of course, that was relayed up to the bridge and to the IT officer, you know, that was in charge of it. And the chief petty officer, the petty officer, was in charge of it as well. So whatever you said in there, you know, went all over the ship, all over the various parts that were necessary. Anyway, so we had the name of ping ratings. We were ping. Ding of the pinger. Bell. Ding of the pinger. Bell. Ding. And anyway, we had 1.5 hours on and 3.5 off. That meant that, you know, your watches, six of you was three watches, you see. So, you know, divided into three. So that was the way it worked. And when you were on watch, you were on watch. You had to concentrate what you were doing. And mind, a lot of plastic buttons went mad, you know. What they did, there was a high percentage went mad because they had to concentrate on what they were doing for so long, you know, for so long hours. I mean, later on, I had to do an action upgrade. I had to do an awful long stint, you know, and the skip would give me time off after that. But,
so it was a sort of stress-related thing?
It was a very stressful job. A lot of people went down with stress, yes, because you had to know what you were doing and you had to concentrate on what you were doing and you had to tell your officers what they were doing as well, you were doing for them, you see. I'll tell you later on about one incident which illustrates this.
Now, what about, so on the Biter, what do you remember of your time with the Biter then? You were based at Belfast and...
Well, it was peculiar. It's something that you hadn't been trained to do big ships like that. I think Britons didn't do big ships like that very much. They were for escort duties. But the Biter was a peculiar mixture of being in the middle of a convoy. You know, you had to interpret the screws going all around you, you know, and all the rest of it. Which was different from how we'd been trained. And you had to realise that you weren't an attacking vessel. You weren't an attacking vessel, you were a defensive vessel. Because you had to get through with the carrier, had to go to get through. You didn't have to worry about chasing the enemy, sort of thing. And it was a very good crew. And I was in the 4th Top Division again in that ship.
So... What would happen if you... I mean, did you get any contacts? Oh, yes.
And when you got contacts, you send them out quickly because you had to get away from it. You didn't have to attack it. You got away from it. Because if the U-boats were hunting you in packs like that, as they were in that time, you know, the wolf packs in that time, and you had to preserve your own ship, of course. I said to one of the... ratings in the dockyard, I said, how many torpedoes would you take? He said, one. That was it, you know. And I thought, well, that's a merchant ship, isn't it? You know, that's a merchant ship. She can only take one torpedo. And she sent for it.
Now, what convoy route were you on? The Atlantic?
In the Atlantic, yes.
And what was a typical convoy like? Where would you...
You always went to the slowest ship, you know. You had to reserve your speed to the slowest ship on the convoy. Of course, you got sometimes very fast convoys. Sometimes you got slow ones, you know. And your slow ones were a terrible trial, you know. Because they were messing with the U-boats, weren't they? You know, and the battle was very well organized ship. The captain was superb, Abel Smith. With his name. He married Lady Mary Cambridge, who was destined to marry the Duke of Windsor at one time, you know. And I remember these things. Actually, I remember this because I had my 21st birthday on the board there in Brooklyn. And the captain, you know, always invites you when you have your 21st birthday, you know, that he's got his liquor cabinet, you know. And he had a lovely liquor cabinet, of course. And he met me on deck and he said, hello, Bill. He said, 21st yesterday? I said, that's right, sir. He said, oh, he said, we'll miss it. He said, come down tomorrow. He said, you'll have to help yourself to buy liquor. And he did. I was his guest, you know, 21st.
Well, for how long? I mean...
Oh, just for the afternoon. Just for an hour or so, you know.
And did he stay and chat with you? Or?
Oh, yes. Actually, I was very, very lucky because... my divisional officer was Lieutenant Leach, RN, and he recommended me to commission. He did, out of the blue. He just said, oh, I want you to take commission course, and I hope you end up as an officer, you know. So I was officer material for him. I had officer-like qualities, he said, you know.
Do you know what he thought about you, you know? What exactly was it he thought he saw that was potential for an officer?
I don't know. They were officer-like qualities, as he called them, you know. You have officer-like qualities, you know. I don't know. I think, you know, that my brother was always well-spoken. He was going to live often, you know. You remember? And he was always very well-spoken. And I think I rubbed off a lot on me, you know. I mean, in my mind, you have to be bilingual, you know. You've got to talk to lads from the mines. You've got to talk properly outside, you know. Of course, my music helped me as well in that. And I think that he thought I was good above the rest. And I became an officer-like quality. And I'm sure after the qualifiers.
Oh, we'll be coming on to that. Now, what about, you know, the rest of the... You had your watches. Did you have any other seamanship duties on board? You were lookout as well, but what? Any other duties aboard ship?
Yes, I did the seamen's duties, you know, pinning ship and this sort of thing. And I always got the master pin, so for some reason, but that's maybe feeding over the water line.
That was the biter you were painting ship?
The biter, yes.
What was painting ship like then? Can you tell us a bit about that?
You'll have to get your bucket and your stage that you're over the side, you know, a stage with two ropes, one on each end of the stage. And of course, you start on the stage, you let yourself down so far, and you painted your section, you see. It was horrible. It was, you got your knees all pinned, you know, down your overalls. It was horrible, horrible. I always thought the pinning ship was the most horrible invention ever. I'm pleased when the priest sprayed them like that, but it didn't in my day. And
Would you have a daily routine joined with the seamen in cleaning
yes,
ship?
Yes, we were allocated our duties. We were lined up in the morning and allocated our duties. Our duties were allocated to us. And our leading seamen, you know, and our petty officer were lined up there. And we were all push-up, as they call it. You know, they all had to do it all.
And what would you do? What was the cleaning routine each day? What jobs might you be given?
Well, yeah, scrub the decks. That's
how do you do that?
Oh, yes. So we had to get the bucket and the bucket and scrub the desks. Decks, oh, yes. Sorry, decks. Swab the decks, not the desks. Swab the decks. That was one way of doing it. And we had to polish as well, polish brushes, you know. Brushes always had to be gleaming, you know. And of course, as soon as the sea water, as soon as the mist from the sea got on them, you know, they were dull again straight away. We used to always laugh about that, you know. But painting was.
What was life like in your mess deck, you know?
Your mess deck, well, you either read or you smoked. I never smoked till I was 23. I never smoked till the time I was on the bike. I never smoked till I was 23 years old. I never smoked at all, which is peculiar, isn't it? Say we've always smoked. But I never did. I was brought up in a non-smoking household, except my father's motorbike, for being a minor, his motorbike. But I and my brother didn't smoke and my sister didn't smoke.
Did that cause comment when you didn't smoke on the biter?
No, it didn't. I don't think I remember ever doing that. There were a few non-smokers, few and far between, mind. There were not many, but I resisted smoking for some reason. Of course, I was always athletic. I was always a footballer and a tennis player, so, and I was always very fit. I was young, you know. Therefore, I was conscious of that.
Now, what was the food like on board ship? What system of giving it out did they have, messing?
The food was Royal Navy messing, but it was American-style serving, you know. You had the tray, and you had your meat there, and your vegetables there, and your sweet there, and all the rest of it, you know, in compartments. And that was all served from the galley, you see.
Did you have to go to the galley, or was it brought to you?
Well, you collected your own tray and sat down in the mess, you know.
So it's a sort of cafeteria
that's
system?
That's right, cafeteria type of thing. Yes, that's what we were looking for. And, yes, that was done, cafeteria system, yes.
And what was the food like?
The food was excellent. I mean, it's American food, you know. We had pork chops and things like this, you know, which we never heard of in the Navy. And we were all brought in the hold, you know, because being a merchantman, she had big holds, you see. And which were never used, maybe, except for storing food and all the rest of it. And they were very, very good, and the butter was superb. And of course, I had 3 months in New York, you know, before I set sail from New York.
Now, what about any? How did you get on with your fellow crewmates on the biter?
They were raw, the same as I was, you know, they were new. Some of the old hands, we've got some old hands, you know, mixed in with us, you know, and they taught us a lot. we got in a naval routine that way, you know. They were soaked in Navy tradition, and of course they passed it on to us as best they could, you know. But we started very well, and we soon became naval ratings.
And what about the leading seamen and the petty officers? How did you get on with them?
The leading seaman was superb. We had a leading seaman at Essex who was called Lynn, and he was an excellent character. What he didn't know wasn't worth knowing, you know. He was excellent. And you had very great faith in them, you know, because they portrayed that they knew what they were doing all the time. And leading seaman Lynn was very, very good. He was very good. We call him Shady Lynn. Shady Lynn. But he was an excellent chap. Mind, a lot of these leading seamen, you know, when they got that back, they went off the rocket.
In what way?
Well, they went peculiar, we should say.
How would it show itself, I mean?
Well, they would portray things that weren't there, you know. They would imagine things, you know, that were going on, and they weren't there. Not visible to me, anyway. But I stayed clear of becoming a leading seaman as well, for that reason. But they were good, they were good.
What about petty officers?
Petty officers were good. Petty officers, of course, had to go through the Arctic courses, you know, and they were leading seamen, then there were petty officer seamen, you know, and then chief petty officer seamen. And they kept the seamen drunk, you know, all the time, but they were Aztecs through and through, you know. And they were very good, they were excellent. The I found the standard maybe was high in Italy.
And, well, officers. What about the officers?
The officers? Well, the RNVR were temporary officers, you know, trained like I was going to be, an RNVR officer. But they were drawn from all sorts of life, weren't they? They were drawn from... I mean, Bert Chambers, for instance, my officer, was an insurance man, you know? Another called Wadsworth was a solicitor. Another called Marsh, he was a newly qualified student, you know, from... And he came to Newcastle University, actually, when he was discharged, Marsh. But I found Lieutenant Leake that recommended me for commission. He knew all about it, he knew what he was doing. He was an RN officer, you know, a peacetime RN officer. He knew what he was doing.
Did you think they were better?
They were much superior. Yeah. I mean, Edward Smith, for instance, he joined the Navy at 9, you know, 10-year-old. And he had been naval right the way through, you know, all that. And, for instance, when we got in convoy duty, I'm going ahead a bit here now, but on the Bighead, when we actually got to see this Abel Smith, you say, port turn or port, as you were being bombed by the troopers, you know, and port turn, port, and he'd say, missed you bastard, you know, and that was the one word I never used in my teacher training after that. I hated the word. He was a captain. He was a four-ring captain, you know. He was a four-ring captain. Abel Smith, four-ring captain then. And he'd come from a cruise or something like that. And he got his ship through the bombs like that, you know. He was wonderful. And I mean, when you got him a ship of that size, I admired him tremendously.